Welcome to Betting 360, your number one source for horse racing and sports betting insights. Coming around the bend is your host, David Duffield, with another expert interview to give you the winning edge.
Hi, this is Dave Duffield, and welcome to another episode of the Betting 360 podcast. I've got Jack Mitchell on the show this week. He's recently gone full-time as a greyhound punter, and I wanted to have a chat with him about how he goes about doing the forum and finding value and then, of course, getting your bets on. So let's talk to Jack.
G'day, Jack. How are you going?
Good, mate. Yourself?
Yeah, really good, thanks, and looking forward to having a chat. I'm not a greyhound expert by any means, so I'm looking forward to learning how you go about it. Excellent. So tell us a bit about your situation, your background, and your interest in greyhounds.
Well, my interest in greyhounds, I mean, I don't have a family that, none of my family are punters or anything, so I sort of fell into that. A couple of guys that I'm mates with and an old manager of mine were greyhound racing nuts, and I just, we were at the tab one day having a bet, and I sort of attached myself to that. I mean, I was a very poor gallops punter before that and sort of needed something that wasn't costing me a bomb every week, and fell into that about 3 years ago and had a look back.
And what is it about the greyhounds that really interests you?
I mean, I found the form. I sort of picked that up naturally, I guess, doing that, so that helps. I think it's just the speed of the races and the fact that I haven't got to worry about jockeys for one, and I just found it easier to read the race, basically. It just sort of started from there.
As of last year, you basically turned to this full-time?
Yeah, last sort of November, December, I mean, I was working at Coles before that, and I just sort of got to about November and thought, I'm a bit sick of being told what to do, so took a jump into it now at 24 rather than wait till I'm 34 and got a mortgage and kids.
Fair enough. And so along the journeys, you're trying to learn more about form analysis, ratings, and everything that goes into that. You've hunted down a few mentors along the way?
Yeah, I think borderline stalked Ben Cray, the old harness power analyst, and picked his brains absolutely no end sort of over the last 12 months, I guess, now, and he's been awesome. I mean, some of the pros that I've come across are very guarded in their secrets and in their methods, and I mean, that's more power to them, I guess, but Ben's, if I ask Ben a question, he sort of opens up no end for me, so it's been really good.
And has it just been greyhound guys that you've been in touch with, or has it been gallops, harness?
Yeah, Ben was greyhounds, he's now harness. I mean, I've spoken to gallops punters, I've spoken to sports punters. I mean, there's something you can sort of learn from everyone, that doesn't necessarily have to come from a greyhound racing background. I mean, you can learn from a sports better guy what his edge is, or how he goes about finding it, or what his maybe his staking method, and you can sort of think, well, can I apply that in some way to what I'm doing? If not, don't apply it. But if you can, then it's great.
All right. So what is your process in doing the form?
Basically, greyhound racing is no different to the other two codes in that leaders win races. So the first thing you want to do is establish from the box draw what dog can or can't lead straight away. So if you've got a dog that is desperate for the rails and has drawn box A, drawn out in the car park, straight away you can sort of go, it's going to struggle to find its way into a race. And I try and just get comfortable early on with the box draw. So I go through each dog's draw, the dog in box one, does it actually want to be drawn next to the rail? Some dogs don't like that sort of cramped up feeling. Some dogs want space. Is the dog drawn in box five really disadvantaged by the middle draw? Or is the dog on the outside, is it going to fly from the outside draw? You sort of try and get comfortable with that and with the first sort of 3 or 4 seconds of the race, because these races are won and lost like that. So try and sort of pick out a speed map from the boxes to the post, or from the boxes to the first marker, so the first 5 to 8 seconds of a race, and get real comfortable with what I've got there, because that's where it's won and lost. So, and then from there, I mean, a dog's run home time is more determined by what traffic it's facing. If it's out in front, it can run home, quick enough that more often than not, it's not going to get run down. So.
And so with the speed maps, are you plotting that somewhere, or is it in your head, or how do you actually do that?
I actually get out an Excel spreadsheet, just a blank spreadsheet, and sort of have the 8 dogs just lined up in a column, And I'll pretty much just use Excel to plot it. So if I think a dog's slow, I'll just drag out one bar and, you know, I'll fill in one bar. If I think a dog's going to fly the lids, you know, I might drag it out five bars, and I just sort of use that as a, almost stops it from having to keep it up top. So, you know, I'm sort of going, oh, what did I think dog one was going to do again? You know, I've just got it there already. You know, I can sort of keep everything up top, nice and clean, I guess.
You're focusing on one geographic area, being Victoria?
Yeah, being Victoria, yeah. I mean, I could have fell into New South Wales. I could have fell into any other state. I just happened to fall into Victoria first. And then once this got more serious, I just stayed there because I knew it.
So, and with the focus on Victoria, does that mean that you get to know the dogs fairly well and their tendencies? Because like you were saying before, it's not just pure speed from the start, but it's also their tendencies, yeah. and some want to find the rail, some don't.
Yeah, so you get to learn what dogs, you know, want to run halfway up the track pretty quick. I mean, on Saturday, for example, I could open up the form guide and look at, you know, the free-for-all race, and I could pretty much look at and plot out a speed map without having to watch too many replays or anything, because you get to know what each animal does. You know, you get to know what dog wants to go hard left or wants to go halfway up the track and go into the grandstand, or what dog's, you know, just going to fall out of the lids, you know, and be two lengths off them straight away.
So you've got the speed maps sorted. What else goes into the form that you do?
So once I get the speed map sorted, you know, the first 5 seconds of a race, I'll marry up, you know, I'll look at the form guide and sort of see, well, the dog's running, you know, X, Y, Z time, and I'll watch a replay and just sort of marry up what I'm seeing in that replay. How did that time, I guess, come to be? I mean, as I said, I look to be on pace runners, you know, 99% of the time, so... Once I get the speed map right, I just sort of want to establish, you know, make sure the dog will get the trip, make sure that the dog isn't going to do anything that I think, oh, you know, might cause itself some trouble. Yeah, some dogs tend to sort of crack under pressure and maybe wander off the rail and then allow another dog through, you know, to run by, basically. It's just about sort of, I guess, getting comfortable with a race as a betting proposition from start to finish.
And how important is fitness when you're doing this work?
For fitness for the dogs, yeah, very important. Some dogs do fly fresh. I mean, it depends. That does a little bit depend on the trainer. You know, some of their dogs, you know, will fly fresh. Some dogs, you know, probably need a run, you know, depending on what class of race they're running into, will need a run or two to get the trip run right out. But generally speaking, you rely on a dog being fit, because otherwise, you know, the trainer's not going to take it to a track, because that is actually their income as well.
So how closely do you monitor the trainers then? And like you mentioned, some will be more likely than others to have them ready, if we'd say, first up.
Yeah, no, I mean, you keep a fair eye on them. You know, names like someone like a Jason Thompson or a Robbie Britton or the Daily Kennel, you know, you can pretty much trust their dogs are going to be right to go every time. They're sort of the cream of the crop in my eyes anyway. And, you know, I like backing their dog because I know that, you know, 99 times out of 100 they're going to be in good nick, which sort of eliminates that one, you know, a variable in the form itself. So
with the overall form, you know, there's each code, whether it's gallops, harness or the dogs, you know, can have a reputation for some interesting results. How have you found that in greyhound racing?
I suppose in terms of dogs checking other dogs out of races and everything, you mean?
No, not just that, but, you know, there are times where, when I say interesting results, you know, there are times when people won't always trust the form.
Yep.
Or, you know, the market moves can be pretty insightful as to how a race is going to go.
Yep.
Do you think that's any more or less prevalent in the dogs?
Yeah, I mean, it does happen for sure. I mean, there are a lot of, I guess, betting kennels in greyhound racing too. So when you see a dog backed clean off the map by, you know, there's a couple of kennels in particular I can think of. If you see one of their dogs back clean off the map, you know it's probably going to be pretty hard to toss. So, you know, it's not uncommon to see something go from $6 or $7 into $2.50, and you sort of look at your form and go, oh, I missed that. Or you look at your form and go, geez, I'm glad I found that, because when it gets smashed in like that, you know it's going to run well, you know, from that kennel.
Last week had Rob Waterhouse on the show, and he talked about SP profiling and how...
Yep.
The horse or the dog's recent price, its price at recent runs is a factor in what he looks at, an important factor. I know Ben does the same for the harness. Do you use that as any kind of form factor?
Very much so, yes. I know that Ben sort of lived on that saying, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire, and I'm much the same. And I know Robbie last week said that there's a lot of information in that, you know, within that price, and he's, I agree 100% with him on that. I think instead of, you know, if you've got a dog who just comes out and runs a flat, you know, doesn't get checked, just runs a flat race, is $1.90 favorite in a race, or, you know, $1.50, whatever it might be. If I go back and look at that and go, it was just a flat run and it was from a good kennel, I can, you know, I'm happy to trust and just put a line through it completely and trust the dog. Because, you know, where there's smoke, there generally is fire. And the amount of times I've seen a dog come out the next run at $3, $4, $5 after a flat run is, you know, $1.50 favorite and come out and smash them by 5-6 lengths, you know, it's, it'd be silly to ignore it.
Yep. There's a lot of aspects to the form, but once you've actually completed the analysis of one race, it's only then that you'll look at the available prices and see what are overlays based on your market?
Yeah, once I've priced up a race and I'm happy with that race, I'm happy to bet into that race and with my market, then I'll look. I sort of think if you start looking at markets before you do your own, you're pretty much going to find your market, you know, 100% of the time will look like a bookmaker's market anyway. And then straight away your edges, you know, have to get that, you might as well forget about it.
Your own rated prices, are they to 100%?
To 100%. I've got Ben's SKU sheet off him, so I'll do it to 130%, and then put it through the SKU and get 100.
And so with the SKU, you're basically punishing the outsiders, making them longer, and keeping the favourites around about that price.
For sure.
I was going to say a million. That might be an exaggeration. There are a lot of greyhound races. So even though you're specialising in Victoria, you've got how many races would there be each week?
Races in Victoria each week. To use today as an example, there's 3 meets. So there's 36 races today, and today's a quiet day, just in Victoria alone. I'm not betting on anything today, but out of those 36 races, you know, hypothetically, I'd probably focus on 6 or 8. I tend to ignore low class races and maiden races, just the dogs haven't sort of proven reliable across over a period of time, so I don't sort of consider them great betting propositions. Nationwide, there's probably 100 races today without looking.
And that presents opportunities, doesn't it, for someone like yourself that's prepared to do the form in depth? The bookies don't have a whole team of greyhound analysts, so you find some of the softer markets and take advantage.
If I want to bet into 5 races for the day, I mean, I might come across 4 where my overlays are minimal, and I'm happy to take them, you know, because they are still value. I'm happy to take them. If I come across one race where I've got a 2 or 3 times overlay and I'm happy with that race, I'm happy to bet into that race, then it's, fill your boots time, hopefully.
You tend to focus on 1 or 2 runners in a race, like you've gone away from monitoring the entire market and entire field and looking at some of the outsiders and whether they might be value. It's mainly focused on the top rated runners.
Yes, I mean, I'll do up a market, and I mean, I do tend to sort of favor front runners anyway, so naturally the short end of the market in my market is the better dogs, so I tend to focus on, you know, 1, 2. I mean, if there's a race where I'm focusing on 3, that's a rare event these days, so I'll focus on 1 or 2 runners in a race and smash them, basically.
Yeah. So it's been a few months now that you've been doing this full time and, prepping to find some winners for our client base. So, that's one thing we're pretty excited about. It's interesting that all the punters and the bookies we speak to, the dogs is going from strength to strength. So, like you said, the volume of races is definitely something that helps it in that way. And also from our perspective, you know, these markets can't be as efficient as the big stuff just because there are too many races to cover and too few people to price them up. So that creates an opportunity for us and one we're looking to take advantage of right away.
Yes, it's pretty exciting stuff, really. I mean, I remember 12 months ago, and it's sort of the elephant in the room still, you know, greyhound racing was pretty much on its knees with the live bait stuff. And now everyone I talk to, you know, they all punt on the dogs or they all have an interest in dog racing. You know, they've all got their favourite dog they like to watch run around. I mean, I think Fernando Bale probably saved the industry, but gave it a fair helping hand at the right time. And, now it's flying.
Excellent. And New South Wales is on the radar as well, but you're a lot more confident in Vic, so that's on the back burner just for the moment?
Yeah. New South Wales is one of those ones where, given time, I'm sure I can sort of nail that down as well. And, I mean, there's no reason I can't. Can't sort of have the same success in New South Wales as I have in Victoria. So
speaking of that success in Victoria, so is it somewhere around about 10% that you'd be confident to forecast?
Yeah, 10%. 10%. I like 10% as a number. every pro that I talk to, 7% seems to be a magic, sort of the magic figure they come up with. I mean, if I got 7%, I'd be happy with that, but 10% is where I want to be. You know, I like to aim a little bit higher, so 10% is good. If I get 12%, I'm, you know, ecstatic.
Amongst the corporate bookmakers, is it just a matter of not going too hard too early, basically to share your bets around a bit?
Yeah, I mean, Bet365, they're up for most races the night before, so naturally they're up first thing in the morning as well. I know that a lot of people are going to sort of say, you know, well, I can't bet there, and I'm in the same boat. They're a good one to have simply because if you get the bets and then have to go into a meeting or whatever, as long as you can get the overlay at 365, you can bet and forget. But I would prefer to wait. Just if you can filter your bets through different companies, and then once the tab come up, you know, they'll take your bets anyway. Sort of, it stops us cannibalizing the market, basically. It stops us smashing markets into place before the bulk of them go up. I mean, it just keeps your accounts alive longer.
How late do the tab go up?
For a meeting like Seeing Down or the Meadows, the metropolitan meetings, they're up. If the first race is at 7, they're up by sort of 5-ish, sort of 2 hours beforehand. Everyone's awake or open 2 hours beforehand. It's about 15 minutes for the provincial meetings, though. So they're sort of up. They go up, and then everyone else who's up gets the copy and paste button furiously working.
Fair enough. All right, we'll leave it there for now. Hopefully it's given people a bit of an insight into your journey, to use a cliche, and yeah, congratulations. Being 24 and going full time's a great effort to take that plunge.
Yeah,
we look forward to working together, and you know, obviously the profitability for the Greyhound Guru subscribers. So really looking forward to that, and we'll have a lot more information for members regarding that. But I just wanted to give the podcast listeners you know, a bit of background on you and what you're up to.
Yeah, good stuff. Very exciting.
Excellent. No worries, Jack. Good to chat to you, mate. We'll
Thanks,
talk
mate.
Soon.
No worries.
Thanks for tuning in to Betting 360. Get more in-depth analysis, tips, and that betting edge by heading over to championpicks.com.au, where you'll find a full transcript of this episode. If you like the show, share us with a fellow punter or drop by iTunes to leave us your thoughts. Betting 360, punting from all angles.